Hi, I'm Mac Jones from Evanston Township High School, and I'm attending this year's Northern Illinois Scholastic Press Association Conference. And you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is fantastic to be here with you today for show number 965. What we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio as usual. And coming up on the show today, Illinois Humanities just had its federal funding slashed. That's the organization that's been supporting community stories, oral histories, and public events from all over Illinois for decades. And look, when you cut funding for the humanities, you're not just trimming fat, you're erasing the platforms that give voice to everyday folks. And yet, in the very same week, I attended a journalism conference at the College of DuPage where hundreds of high school students from the suburbs of Chicago were learning how to chase stories, ask tough questions, and shape narratives. These kids are sharp, and they care about the truth. They care about community, and they care about lifting up voices that aren't always heard. But here's the thing. What kind of future are we handing them if the institutions that support public storytelling, like Illinois Humanities, are being hollowed out? We tell young people that their voices matter, then turn around and cut the mic. This isn't just a budget issue, it's a values issue. Do we want a state where storytelling thrives, where kids learning journalism today have the curiosity, skills, and platforms to share what they uncover tomorrow? On the show today, we explore what's going on with Illinois Humanities in the wake of the announced budget cutting. And we hear from some of those involved in that journalism conference I mentioned, including the voices of some future journalists. So while the federal government is seemingly cutting everything else in sight, Outside the Loop is fully funded and ready to roll. The Department of Government Efficiency, also known as DOGE, has issued sweeping cuts to the National Endowment for the Humanities, cuts that pull funding from every state, including Illinois. Joining us today are Gabrielle Lyon. She's the executive director of Illinois Humanities and musician, cultural historian, resident of Macomb, Illinois, performer Chris Villillo. They are here to break down what these cuts mean for rural towns, local museums, education, local arts, and the future of public storytelling and community in America. Chris and Gabe, welcome to Outside the Loop. It's great to have you here.
Great to be with you, Mike. Thanks for taking the time.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Mike.
You got it. You know, just one or two important things to get to here, so we'll talk about it. So, Gabe, let me go to you first. First of all, if maybe folks aren't familiar with Illinois Humanities and what you do, what is Illinois Humanities and why is it valuable to our fabric of society here?
If people aren't already familiar with Illinois Humanities, what I hope they come to know is that we have been around for 50 years with the primary purpose of making sure that federal dollars come back to Illinois and get used locally to support arts and culture, where people live and learn so that everybody can be together and benefit from the humanities. We're a nonprofit organization. We're not a government agency. And the National Endowment for the Humanities was set up under Nixon because the humanities are so important to our standing as a country at home and abroad. We needed to have a special agency just for that.
And what you do in Illinois, and I know there are other state agencies that are under that umbrella, but really you are bringing together people through art and culture, education. And so this is stuff, you know, I think so many of us value this and we like this and we think it's important. And so Illinois Humanities, as this organization here in the state, is really kind of curating a lot of these programs. And especially when it comes to communities that are maybe in the rural areas of the state.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Chris, I'll go to you for this because you are in Western Illinois. You're over in Macomb. And I know that you've been out there for quite a while, and you've really had an interest in bringing people together through culture and art and music in that area, but also telling the story of that particular community. So tell us about your relationship with Illinois Humanities and what it is that you do.
So I am a performer, a musician, a songwriter, a playwright, and I focus on rural Illinois as my artistic muse. I've been out in this area since 1976, and I just fell in love with the small towns and the people that make up rural Illinois. And I've tried to reflect that in the work that I do, going all the way back to 1986, when I was involved documenting the last of the pre-radio generation of musicians in Illinois, on up into the 90s, when I first became actively involved with Illinois Humanities. And they introduced me to a program that they have called the Rhodes Scholars Speakers Bureau. Now, this program actually takes speakers and performers that have humanities-based themes and puts them into communities all across the state. Mm. And it has been an incredible program that has allowed me to develop a whole series of different shows reflecting the culture and heritage of our region. And it's also put me into places that have never had live programming of any kind before. It's an amazing program. I've just been thrilled to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's amazing that we can say that. There are parts of the state that have never had any kind of live programming, be it, you know, museums that come through with sort of traveling exhibitions or live performances when it comes to music and dance, etc. So Chris, what you're saying here is the importance of what Illinois Humanities does across the state of Illinois, but especially these rural areas, because that's where you're based. You see a lot of that. That's really invaluable, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I have done programs in communities. I did a Rhodes Scholar program many years ago in Marshall, Illinois. First time they ever had live programming in their community. Now, we figured we might get 25 people. There were 150 people that attended that. They were standing outside the door of the little library we were in. And it was very exciting to see how this, it excited the community, it connected the community, and it brought people together. And then after my program, they were all sharing their own stories with me and with each other. And it creates this sense of community, which is so critically important in this day and age.
Yeah, it is that sense of community that I think we are longing for, especially here we are a few years out of the pandemic now. We don't want to go back to that. And that was so frustrating because we were so isolated. And so we really sometimes take that community, that sense of community, for granted. So, Gabe, let me ask you, I mean, the long-term impacts here of what we're talking about, these cuts to the humanities and specifically Illinois Humanities, what's the danger here when we talk about these cuts? Why is this kind of like a red alert situation?
I think the first thing to understand is that Illinois Humanities, these dollars are foundational support. They're not like a regular grant where we say, hey, we have an idea for a program, federal agency. Can you give us money to do that? No, when the agency was set up with the assurance that a portion of its annual budget would go to each state and territory. So it's foundational. It's taxpayer dollars that are supposed to be coming back to Illinois, and they were already appropriated by Congress. The fact that this core funding has been withdrawn suddenly, literally in the dark of night, look, it's deeply, deeply concerning. I think the impact in the short term and the impact in the long term are profound. We are at Illinois Humanities really looking at the grants, the public programs, the education we do, so that we are making sure not to miss a beat. If we have commitments, we're going to be honoring those commitments. Looking ahead, if those funds are not put back, if they don't get reinstated, we're going to have some very difficult conversations about the scale and scope. And I mean, Chris and you were just talking a minute ago about our traveling exhibition program. You know, that's a program that brings exhibitions to towns of like 6,000 or less. You know, we are the only organization that does that. So when we say, what is the impact? What I'm most concerned about is an impact on the things coming out of COVID we know are in greater demand than they were before COVID. Free history and heritage programs, performances and opportunities for people to like come together and be together around the things that we care about as people, not because of our political parties, but because we're human beings with curiosity and interest. I really, really worry about the scale and scope of what it will mean for our grant program. You know, a place like Macomb with its fabulous Western Illinois Museum, you know, we might be the sole partner for them on a special kind of program that nobody else is in the position to fund. But in really small towns, you know, Rushville, for example, they don't necessarily have the kinds of funding possibilities or population that a place like Chicago has. So I think, you know, we're really focused on doing what we can to make sure our vision and our mission stays strong: access, education, public dialogue. And secondly, to really respond to the outstanding support we're finding. I mean, we the outpouring of concern and engagement is really, really high. If you thought the humanities were invisible, I can tell you they're becoming real visible, real fast.
We should also mention ilhumanities.org is the website. So if we're so inclined, we can support Illinois Humanities that way. But Chris, I want to go to you about this, the impact here, because you're on the ground, right? You are in Macomb. You're in these rural communities. You're talking to people. You're performing for people. So the impact of this, what do you see that being going forward here?
Well, that's a really powerful question, because I have seen Illinois Humanity has literally been in the forefront of bringing dollars into rural Illinois, creating programming, engaging our audiences. And I have seen in the last 4 or 5 years a very positive return on that investment. And this is going to threaten that, the growth that we've had in terms of culture and the humanities, and not just in rural Illinois. Illinois Humanities programming has allowed me to get up into the urban areas as well. And this ability to go to areas I couldn't normally get, that's absolutely critical. To me as an artist, of course, it is. But more importantly, to rural Illinois, the ability to talk and share stories, there is a great thirst out there for this. I see it in every program I do in these small communities. And I really feel like we were making progress in that area, and there were some small changes going on, almost a microscopic renaissance in some small rural communities, if you will. All that's going to be a threat now, and it's going to affect all of the things that come from that. The economic stimulation that arts programming and cultural programming create, the conversations that we have together. This is a critical time, and the work that Illinois Humanities does is just priceless. We need to support this.
Yeah, and I think about what you're both saying, and you know, we as a country, we keep saying, boy, aren't we polarized today? Isn't there this gulf between us? And now here we're saying, here's a way where we can come together.
That's exactly the point, Mike. That's exactly the point. We are creating opportunities for conversations and people to interact and cross those divides.
It's not lost on me that this message comes from Doge late at night with no understanding of what's actually happening in Illinois. Coming out of the pandemic, there is more demand for these programs than ever. Rhodes Scholars, the requests for presenters and performers, that fills up barely before we can list them. A program like the kinds of book groups, you know, we've been doing a series called reimagining the American dream. What an amazing opportunity where people get to tell and share stories of what their dream has been, the ways in which they're rethinking it. And that's whether you've been here 5, 6, 10 generations, or you're a new arrival. You know, those are the kinds of places and spaces that the humanities create. Anything that kind of just helps us be human together, that's what we mean when we say the humanities. And the things that are in more demand than ever, those are the things that are most at risk by this funding being cut.
Look, every day I look at my phone, I've said this before, and every time there's a notification from, I don't know, the New York Times or wherever, I think, oh my God, what is coming next? So this stuff is changing, it's evolving, but Gabe, is there a timeline? I mean, these cuts were recently announced, and so is there a timeline about how this is all going to roll out, or do we even know this yet?
I think that, look, the thing about getting a letter saying, we've terminated your funding now and into the future. The thing to understand is they're terminating funding, but we've already paid for most of those programs.
Right.
So just to understand the brass tacks of what's happening here. The second thing is, look, like any person, I'm a working mom. If I suddenly found out I was losing a third of my income, I got to roll up my sleeves and understand what that means. That's what we're doing right now, evaluating how to protect what's in place, prioritize programming, and really recalibrate what's on deck. But the other thing is the demand is strong. And so I think that people who are trying to say, well, God, I care about this, or I never heard about Illinois Humanities, but I want to understand what's happening. And is there something happening near me? Our website is a great place to start. One, you can find programs happening right now. We are not going dark. We're not laying people off. We are running programs, and we're committing to keep what we have in place. The second thing is, if people want to get involved, you know, if you're in a community or town where you feel like, hey, I don't want this stuff to go away, you can call your congresspeople. That window is right now, and it's, you can call more than once. You can call today and you can call tomorrow and let them know that this is really important.
That's right. And the website, we should mention again, ilhumanities.org. Chris, before I let the two of you go, let me just ask you this. Let's say these politicians are listening. Let's say the federal government's listening. And who knows? Maybe they are. In which case, hi. And hey, Chris has a really, really important message for you politicians. Chris, what is that message?
The message is that the humanities are critical, and blindly cutting humanities across the board is destructive, and it serves no valuable purpose. We need to come together as a people. We do that through dialogue. We do that through conversation, and simply removing one of the most effective ways of doing that right now is going to be damaging to everything that we hold dear as a nation.
I say amen to that, and I'm pulling for Illinois Humanities. I'm just pulling for the humanities in general. I'm pulling for humanity, I guess I should say.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Go to ilhumanities.org, and Gabrielle Lyon is the executive director of Illinois Humanities, and Chris Villillo, resident of Macomb, Illinois, and a musician, performer, and a member of the Illinois Humanities Rhodes Scholars Speakers Bureau. Thank you both so much for talking to us today. This is really, really important that we know what's going on here, and let's keep rooting for the humanities.
Thank you, Mike. We really appreciate it.
This is, I think, one of my favorite times of the year because I get to come to this Northern Illinois Scholastic Press Association conference here at the College of DuPage, and I'm here with Jason Block, who is a multimedia teacher and advisor at Prospect High School. Hey, man, it's always fun to hang out with you here. This is such a cool day, and how many years has this been going on now?
Oh, my gosh. I can only speak for myself. I've been coming to this event since I was a student at Hersey High School in the early 90s. I've been coming to NISPA. So now for me to be the one that's kind of making sure NISPA runs smoothly and keeps, you know, keeps on keeping on, it's kind of it's a cool feeling.
That is a cool feeling. So this is great, this event where students get to come together and they get to network with each other from different schools. And tell us a little bit about what happens here during the day.
So I think it's just a really, like you said, it's a cool experience for them because I always think about how nobody else in their buildings really gets what they do, knows what they do. And so they have an opportunity for a day to be able to be around other kids who are just like them, who experience the same challenges and successes and all the ups and downs of the media industry. And they get to share ideas with them and just, you know, make connections like that. But then also I love their ability, I have them having the opportunity to be able to meet professionals in the industry, to be able to go to these breakout sessions that we have this afternoon where they get to hear from people like the famous Mike Stevens and learn about podcasting, and be able to see that this is a career pathway, that there are so many opportunities that go beyond a high school newspaper or a high school TV station, that you could take these skills that you're learning in our classes and use them in so many different ways. And so they really get to get that real world exposure, and they had so many options today where it's like, here, I want to go check out this, and then I'm going to go check out that and kind of see what I could bring back to my school with me.
You know, what you said there, I think, as a fellow teacher as well, I think that's so important because sometimes when kids are in school, they think, am I ever going to use this stuff? Does this stuff really matter in the real world? And this today is an opportunity for you as a teacher to say, hey, look, the stuff that you're learning in the classroom, this is where you could be. This is like a real world thing for them.
Yes, and I think that's what's really cool for them to see. I've got for them today some kids who are current, I call them kids, they're, because I knew them when they were kids, young adults, who are in college doing this. And so they're able to see, whoa, I could do this in college too. This is what my major might look like, or this is what the newspaper or the TV station looks like in college. So I could kind of see that next step, but then I could also see the step that's a few more years down the road from that and be able to see, like, what is it really like to work at a TV station, as they're seeing our keynote speaker here in a minute, Marissa, who's at CBS Chicago, and they're going to see what her day is like in the newsroom. She actually just got off the air at 7 a.m. this morning and drove straight here to be able to talk to our students today about life as a TV reporter and anchor. She just anchored the, you know, the morning news. So yeah, it is that, that's the way you put it, Mike, is perfect, is this opportunity to say what we're working on in a classroom, this is real. This isn't, not to begrudge our essays that we have them write for our traditional English classes, but this is not an essay with an audience of one. You are doing real work for real audience, and you are gonna get to see today where this could lead you.
You know, every year that you and I talk here, I feel like there's always something new with the industry or in the world. And right now we are in a lot of things happening all at once. And thinking about the media industry, I mean, from year to year, there have been so many changes. I know in the last year, even since the last time you and I spoke, AI has really just shot through the roof in terms of popularity, and people are using it, and they're not always using it ethically or effectively. So with this kind of new technology on the horizon here, how does that factor into what you're teaching in the classroom when it comes to journalism?
So what's really cool about it is that in my other classes, it's more of a top-down thing of like, this is acceptable, this is unacceptable when it comes to AI, because that is the hot topic in all of my classes. But when it comes to my multimedia classes, it's collaborative. We actually sat down as a program and we said, let's talk about this, because it exists. Let's not act like it doesn't. Let's not stick our fingers in our ears and act like it's not out there and it's not playing a huge role in their lives and in the media landscape also. So we sat down as my program is, we call it Night Media. We sat down as a program, we said, this is what's acceptable. We think it's acceptable to get AI, to go on AI, and use it as you're trying to brainstorm some B-roll shots you're going to get for your video story, to say, all right, I'm doing a story on the swim team. I'm going to get a shot from the diving board and from the deck and from our... What am I missing? And type it in there and say, ooh, get a tight shot of the person doing the breaststroke. Awesome. That'd be really cool. I would have never thought of that. It's a fine line, though, to say that's in that gray area where as a program we said, that's okay. And then you have these other, you hear about these horror stories where it's like, we know it's not acceptable to use it to produce content. And that's never a line we're going to cross, but these are the beauty of it. The part that's so taking a negative and making it positive, it's so invigorating to see kids having these conversations, these real conversations about, would it make our lives infinitely easier if it just churned out all of our content and then I could go and, you know, hop on TikTok and spend the rest of my afternoon there? But we're having real conversations where they're invested and they're being adults and they're saying, in our program, this is what we can do, this is what we can't do, this is where we draw the line, and most importantly, this is why. They really think, they have those, it's very thoughtful.
And I think we never in the mainstream hear about that. I think we hear about the negative effects. Yes. And as you said, there are many. Yeah. There could be many. But we don't hear about the good stuff, how it's being used effectively and ethically, AI I'm talking about. Yes. And we sometimes write off young people like, oh, they just want to go on TikTok. And now I know there are issues with social media and cell phone addiction. But, I mean, people here are learning it the right way. And they are, I think, driven by the truth, which I think today, more than ever, maybe, in our lifetime, we need that, don't
we? Yeah, and I think that's a great point, is that wouldn't we rather have them being able to, instead of AI being this kind of elephant in the room, right? Let's talk about the elephant, right? And let's address it because it's a part of their lives. It's not going anywhere, and it's about the responsibility of it. So I think if more areas of, whether it's academics or professional or whatever, have these conversations instead of it being the wild, wild west of it's out there and people are using it, we don't know how and what. No, we're having these ethical conversations. I think that's one of the great parts about this community that we're a part of journalism, of media, is that we're having these conversations. We're trying to get out in front of it and talk about the ethics of it. And to bring it back to my students is they're 16, 17, 18 years old having these conversations. And that's awesome.
And again, coming back to this issue of they're going after the facts. They're going after the truth. They're trying to tell these stories in a way that is, with fidelity and honesty. And I think we need sometimes to be reminded of that, especially today, where sometimes media is looked at as like, you're just one-sided or partisan. And sometimes that does happen. But we're talking about kids who are learning it the right way.
Yeah, and learning by, I like that idea of coming back to what we're teaching them most of all is seeking out the truth and reporting it. And there's been so many situations in the professional media where that's not happening. And where my students and our students collectively here at NISPA, where they're learning today and throughout their year about having tough conversations with administrators. You're 15 or 16 years old and you've got to sit down with your principal and you're going to have a conversation about Israeli-Palestinian conflict and students at your school and how are we teaching this and how are we discussing this in the classroom, and that stuff that you can't get in other areas of study where you are sitting down with real people getting to the truth. And we always say something like, if you're going to write something, you have to allow the people that are involved, allow them to defend themselves. That's not easy. It's really easy to be a keyboard warrior and sit there and take shots at an organization or an individual. We don't do that in journalism, or at least when you're doing journalism correctly, that's not what we're doing. Is, all right, you're gonna say that there's something wrong with this aspect of the school, go talk to the person in charge of that and allow them to defend themselves. That's a valuable life skill no matter what these kids are gonna be going into, of saying, sit down like we're doing right now. Look somebody in the eye, have a conversation, listen to what they have to say, and then go from there. I think it's invaluable.
I'm so excited to be here. I get fired up after this day. I'm excited to speak, so thank you for letting me present. That's very nice of you. And hopefully they learn something. But really, this is awesome. And I know in a little bit here, we're going to hear from a couple of your students about their experience here and their future and what they want to do. But Jason Block, multimedia teacher and advisor at Prospect High School, I say thank you so much for having me here and for all you're doing here.
It's always a pleasure. Love this event. Love having you here, Mike. You're one of my go-tos, and I look forward to it every year.
Here we are in the atrium of the Mackinich Arts Center here at the Northern Illinois Scholastic Press Association. I'm here with two high school seniors at Prospect High School, Claire Weinkoop and Kenny Mineo. Thanks for being here. First of all, I know that you're very involved in your journalism program at Prospect, but why is an event like this important to you? Claire, I'll start with you.
I think it's really important to me that we go to these kinds of things because I love learning from other journalists, even high school journalists, because I think there are so many things that people are doing at their schools and in their print publications and on their online publications that I can adapt and I can use and I can grow from. And I love coming here and learning from people and meeting all these other journalists who want to do the things that I want to do and want to grow in the way that I want to grow. So it's been really beneficial for me the past 3 or 4 years, and that's why I love it.
Because you also interact with people your age from other schools who are doing the same thing, which I think is awesome. Kenny, what about you?
Yeah, I love being exposed to the new ideas that we find here, whether it be from the professionals or from high schoolers. And I think one of my main goals when I come here always is to make connections, mostly with high schoolers from other schools in the area. Try to not necessarily make friends, but make people that, you know, when I'm down the line, hey, I know you, you know, we've worked together in the past. But also, you know, I'm always trying to take in as much as I can from those classes. And it's a unique opportunity to see a real life example and something you really want to do.
That's so great that you're saying that, because a lesson I think that a lot of young people have to learn, and it sounds like you're both learning that, is it's all about connections. It's all about relationships. And in the professional world especially, like, you're doing what you're going to be doing for the rest of your lives in terms of trying to make those connections. That's going to help you down the road. So what kind of journalism are you both into, Kenny? What are you into?
So my true passion comes through announcing. I love commentating. I've done it for 3 years at Prospect. I just did my last game a month ago. It was my 85th broadcast. So most of those with Prospect, some other schools also. I love broadcast journalism as well. I love telling stories. I've tried to get away from sports. You know, I'm a big sports guy. I've played my whole life. But trying to branch out, doing more local stories on the community and things that impact people outside of the athletic arena.
And Claire, what about you?
My advisor likes to tell me that I'm a jack of all trades. I've done print, I've done cameras and live producing, and I'm currently the editor-in-chief of our website publication. And honestly, what I love the most, which doesn't always come through, is photography. I really want to go into sports photography, and it's such a cool art form to me, and it's such a cool way of telling people's stories and participating in journalism.
And it's really cool to hear you both say that. And I think kind of what you were saying there, Claire, one thing that jumps out to me is that today I think that you almost have to be a jack of all trades, because some of these big media companies, they don't want to spend a ton of money. So if you can do the job maybe of a couple people, you'd be very, very valuable. So on that topic, you know, we are in interesting times here, just on so many levels. But when it comes to media, and there's been some consolidation, there's been some layoffs, and it hasn't always been a rather rosy picture going forward. So when you look into your future here, why do you want to do this thing? Why is this like something that you're so passionate about, even maybe when at times it's not exactly all sunshine and lollipops? Kenny, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so my parents are always saying you're going to have to fight tooth and nail to get a job and wherever you can out of college. But honestly, it was kind of a dream of mine growing up to be a commentator. I never thought I could. It was kind of like being an astronaut, like a NASCAR driver. You know, it's kind of an unrealistic dream. I didn't really think it was possible. But to be able to live out that dream in high school, whether I'm able to make a career out of it or not, I am so grateful for the opportunity. And it's just every day I get to, whether it's doing the announcing or doing broadcast stories, I didn't realize it was such a niche community. I didn't realize it was possible to become a part of it.
I would say keep going. I was my high school's public address announcer for the sports games. Look how I turned out. Here I am. I don't know if that's an endorsement, but Claire, what about you?
Kenny and I both know this. Sports journalism isn't going anywhere. People love to watch sports. People love to listen to commentators. And with everything going on with media now, I have so much passion to go out and tell stories and to go meet people, especially, and make connections. And I never thought I would love this. I didn't have Kenny's dream growing up. I thought I was going to be a teacher. And then my advisor came in and was like, no, you could do this. And I was like, oh, that's so fun. I'm so excited about it, too.
So what I'm hearing here is that you're both very driven, it seems, but you're also just really inspired by the art, but also telling the stories, maybe the performance of it as well. And I think that you, at your relatively young age, the fact that you know this about yourselves speaks a lot, and it's going to set you up for success. So looking forward in the short term, I suppose, we don't know next year. I think, Kenny, you said you're going to Mizzou. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, going to Mizzou, majoring in broadcast journalism. Yeah.
And then, Claire, we're not quite sure yet?
I'm most likely going to end up at Kansas, majoring in sports management and public relations.
This is something to tell the stories, to talk to people, to uncover stuff, to showcase stuff. I mean, this is what's necessary. So before I let you go back to your conference here, I know it's a busy day. What are you most excited about when you think about your possible career in this field? What is, as you look down the road, what is exciting to you? What is inspiring to you? What are you just fired up about? Kenny, what do you think?
My mind immediately goes to announcing and commentating and being a part of that whole atmosphere. I don't think there's a better place to be than a ballpark or a football stadium or anything. And just to be able to have a conversation with some of the guys that I've looked up to my whole life, some of these athletes into, you know, some idols of mine, to be able to be in that same area as them, to be able to be on maybe the same pedestal as them is kind of just mind-boggling. And, you know, hopefully I get that opportunity one day.
Yeah, I hope so too. And Claire, what about you?
The thing that immediately jumps out at me was the idea of being on the sideline. I've always loved being on the sideline. Kenny likes being up in the booth and calling things. And whether I'm taking pictures or working with a live broadcast or even writing a story, there is nothing like the feeling of being so close to a game, so close to people doing what they love while you're doing what you love. And I hope I get to experience that.
Well, I'm excited for the both of you. I think you have a bright future ahead of you, and I would say keep going. There'll be some ups and downs for sure, but it's worth it. And best of luck to you, Kenny Mineo and Claire Weinkoop, seniors at Prospect High School. And who knows, maybe you'll have my job one day, Kenny. I don't know. You know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But thank you both for talking to us here at this Northern Illinois Scholastic Press Association.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Kenny, you want to throw it to a commercial here? Okay, so here's what you're going to say. You ready? Okay, you're going to say, you're listening to Outside the Loop.
You're listening to Outside the Loop.
Here on 720 WGN.
Here on 720 WGN.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 965 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. As always, we say thank you to Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have just a marvelous week. Stay sane out there. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.